Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
That's an amazing honor for you to say that. It's tremendous. I appreciate it, Michael.
But, Donald, why should I hide it? I mean, people make believe that they're not biased. You know and I know the media is biased one way or the other. They all pretend that they're scientists in a laboratory with a pipette in their mouth. They're all biased. They all have an axe to grind. Look what they're doing to you, smearing you every day with lies. Garbage, pure garbage, while they let Obama get away with virtual murder, give the bomb to Iran. Why is the media not saying one word about what Obama is doing to wreck this nation, Mr. Trump?
Well, he is doing a terrible job. He's been a terrible president. The person that likes him most, you know, I always say is Jimmy Carter, because Jimmy's now number two.
But, Donald, let's be clear. We know that we have a problem with illegals. We know that we have illegals voting in this country. We know that to vote in Mexico, every eligible Mexican has to have a tamper-proof photo ID card with a thumbprint and an embossed hologram. Would you use an executive action to establish strict voter ID laws in the U.S. if you became president?
Well, you know, something has to be done, and I can't believe it, where they want to take away cards, they want to take away identification. I assume that means somebody could vote 10 times. I mean, who the hell is going to know the difference? But, you know, it's incredible when you look, and you speak of Mexico, and I have great, you know, I have so many people from Mexico. They work for me. They're wonderful people. They're great people. And I respect Mexico as a country. The problem is their leaders are too smart for it. They're very cunning, and they're very smart.
That was Donald Trump on this show about a week and a half ago, and of course I played him to get your attention because everyone's ears and eyes will be on Donald tonight on the debate coming out. It's coming out of Ohio, I suppose. Yes. No one knows why it's in Ohio. I have no idea why they go to Cleveland or wherever they're putting it. We know that from 1869 to 1913, that was a long time ago, six of the 10 presidents who made it to the White House came from Ohio. But I think things have changed. This is an interesting one, though, and I didn't know this. In the 29 presidential elections since 1900, Ohio has correctly picked the winner 27 times. I don't know why. What is it about Cincinnati and Cleveland? Does anyone know? Welcome to the Savage Nation. Did I get your attention? Or is your mind only on Fox News? You're watching, that's all they're on. I think they're riveted. I'm not even going to talk about the debate because I'm not running it. What I'm going to talk about is something that you should be talking about, and that is this. You remember several years back, oh, it's a long time ago, I know, a naval helicopter went down with the entire SEAL Team 6 on it. Remember I said it was a setup? Remember I said they were sent into a kill zone to be killed? Remember I wrote a whole novel that began with this story called A Time for War, which is a bestseller, by the way? It opens with that helicopter crash in that valley, in the Chinook. Remember we had the parents of the surviving SEALs on the show over and over again, demanding a congressional investigation. And remember there was a little congressional investigation about the SEAL Team 6 helicopter crash? Well, guess what just happened? The Obama administration is now, currently, freshly, violating a judge's order to turn over all documents in the August 6th, 2011, shoot-down of a U.S. helicopter, call sign Extortion 17, which killed members of SEAL Team 6 in Afghanistan. This is a huge story. Why is it a huge story? Because the members of SEAL Team 6 are the very members of the team who killed Osama bin Laden. Many of us outside observers believe that someone or someones inside the Defense Department, some deep plants in the executive office, sent this very same team that killed Osama bin Laden to their deaths. Did you hear what I just said? We are saying that there was treason. We are saying that these men were sent to their deaths on purpose. And this lawsuit, which is being stonewalled by your honest president, he is the most transparent, honest president in Russian history. And this Russian administration is telling the judge's order, well, he's saying to the judge, go wipe the wall with your order. We're not turning over any documents in the shootdown of this U.S. helicopter. It's a very big story. People died. We all believe that SEAL Team 6 had a target on its back. We all believe that people inside the Afghan National Security Forces tipped off the Taliban that night in Tangi Valley. We believe also that someone in the administration also worked with the Taliban through the Afghan National Security Force to kill these men, and we believe that they deserve more than what they've gotten. My hat is off to Mr. Klayman. Mr. Klayman is pushing this through a Freedom of Information Act case, but they will not release the records concerning the deaths of Navy SEAL Team 6. If you want to read more about this story, I know your mind is only on the debate. I get it. This is old news to you. We can't be bothered about some heroes who are assassinated by their own government. Nah. Not when they're sending American troops to court-martial who stood up to the Muslim murderer, for example, where was that? I forgot already the city. Chattanooga. See how fast the news goes? I forgot already. Chattanooga. 855-407-2282 is the phone number. In a few minutes, I'm going to come back to the SEAL Team 6 shootdown. We're going to come back to the Obama administration refusing to release information. If you want to read the whole story on it, if you have the time, it's from the Washington Times by Rowan Scarborough, and it's linked up on michaelsavage.com. Something went wrong. Somebody was leaking to the Taliban. They knew. Somebody tipped them off. There were guys in the mud tower, guys on the bush line. They were sitting there waiting, and they sent these boys to die. Whoever did this committed treason and should be tried and, when found guilty, executed. Yeah, in the most transparent administration possible. Also in the news, in radio news, which is a big deal to me, maybe not to you, I received an email this morning from my good friend and colleague at Cumulus Media, Dennis Green, who has been one of the supporters of my show from the beginning. And he said, Michael, good news. Can I read it to you? Well, Michael Savage, the committee has spoken, and you were selected for nomination for the Radio Hall of Fame. Well-deserved, and hopefully you will be selected for induction. The story is in today's radio trades. And so that is true. I don't know whether I'll be nominated and inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame. But given that I'm an outsider on the outside of the outsiders, it's anyone's guess who will win in the category in which I've been nominated. But it's sort of honor enough for me, an outsider's outsider, to have been nominated as one of those possible winners to the National Radio Hall of Fame. And if I'm not selected by the 400 industry professionals, the show will go on. It's that simple. But thank you, whoever nominated me, because I don't know who it is. It's a secret issue. I want to do something that needs to be done. It's not long. And for those of you who have any respect for our military and our men in uniform, especially those who died at the hands of some very evil people on SEAL Team 6, if you're at home, I ask you to stand up and put your hand on your heart. If you're in a car, well, you got to keep driving, but you can flash your lights even if it's daytime. Because we're about to read the names of the SEALs who died. They're not going to die unknown, not on my show. Listen, on August 11, 2011, some of our bravest men were put into an old, slow-flying helicopter and sent to their death. To this day, there has been no recognition, no investigation, but their names will be remembered now on the Savage Nation. The following sailors were assigned to an East Coast base Naval Special Warfare Unit. They were killed. Lieutenant Commander SEAL Jonas B. Kelsall, 32, of Shreveport, Louisiana. Special Warfare Operator Master Chief Petty Officer SEAL Louis J. Langley, 44, of Santa Barbara, California. Special Warfare Operator Senior Chief Petty Officer SEAL Thomas A. Ratzlaff, 34, of Green Forest, Arkansas. Explosives Ordnance Disposal Technician, Senior Chief Petty Officer, Craig M. Vickers, 36, of Kokomo, Hawaii. Special Warfare Operator Chief Petty Officer SEAL, Brian R. Bill, 31, of Stamford, Connecticut. Special Warfare Operator Chief Petty Officer SEAL, John W. Fass, 31, of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Special Warfare Operator Chief Petty Officer SEAL, Kevin A. Houston, 35, of West Hyannisport, Massachusetts. Special Warfare Operator Chief Petty Officer SEAL, Matthew D. Mason, 37, of Kansas City, Missouri. Special Warfare Operator Chief Petty Officer SEAL Stephen M. Mills, 35, Fort Worth, Texas. Explosives, Ordnance Disposal Technician, Chief Petty Officer Nicholas H. Null, 30, of Washington, West Virginia. Special Warfare Operator Chief Petty Officer SEAL Robert J. Reeves, 32, of Shreveport, Louisiana. Special Warfare Operator Chief Petty Officer SEAL Heath M. Robinson, 34, of Detroit, Michigan. Special Warfare Operator Petty Chief Petty Special Warfare Operator Petty Officer First Class Navy SEAL Derek C. Benson, 28, of Angwin, California. Special Warfare Operator Petty Officer First Class SEAL Parachutist Christopher G. Campbell, 36, of Jacksonville, North Carolina. Information Systems Technician, Petty Officer First Class. Freefall Parachutist, Jared W. Day, 28, of Taylorsville, Utah. Master at Arms, Petty Officer First Class. Expeditionary Warfare Specialist, John Duong Dara, 26, of Sioux City, Nebraska. Cryptologist Technician, Petty Officer First Class, Expeditionary Warfare Specialist, Michael J. Strange, 25, of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. His parents have been on the show several times. Special Warfare Operator, Petty Officer First Class, SEAL Enlisted Surface Warfare Specialist, John T. Tummelson, 35, of Rockford, Iowa. Special Warfare Operator, Petty Officer First Class, SEAL Aaron C. Vaughn, 30, of Stuart, Florida. His folks have been on the Savage Nation. Special Warfare Operator, Petty Officer, First Class, SEAL Jason R. Workman, 32, of Blanding, Utah. Special Warfare Operator, Petty Officer, First Class, SEAL Jesse D. Pittman, 27, of Ukiah, California. And Special Warfare Operator, Petty Officer, Second Class, SEAL Nicholas P. Spihar, 24, of St. Paul, Minnesota. Aboard that ill-fated helicopter, also plummeting to their deaths in that fiery wreckage, were soldiers. Chief Warrant Officer David R. Carter, 47, of Centennial, Colorado. Chief Warrant Officer Brian J. Nichols, 31, of Hays, Kansas. Staff Sergeant Patrick D. Hamburger, 30, of Lincoln, Nebraska. Sergeant Alexander J. Bennett, 24, of Tacoma, Washington. Specialist Spencer C. Duncan, 21, of Kansas. There were airmen killed in that crash, 3 of them, and that will complete the list. The real heroes that Obama spits upon. Technical Sergeant John W. Brown, 33, of Tallahassee, Florida. Staff Sergeant Andrew W. Harvell, 26, of Long Beach, California. And finally, Technical Sergeant Daniel L. Zerbe, 28, of York, Pennsylvania.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCOIN. I'm still a little shaken from that, I'll be very honest with you. I had a lot of trouble composing myself during reading those names, and also after it. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not cynical, if you may think it's cynical, and I'm just using them. You're actually more cynical than you may imagine. Because I don't want their names to die in vain. This administration is so putrid and so evil that they will violate a judge's order to turn over documents in the shootdown of that helicopter where these Navy SEALs were executed. Many of us believe by this administration as payback for killing Osama bin Laden to somebody somewhere. What are they hiding? What is your great, honest, open President Obama, the most honest man in the history of the Soviet Union, hiding? This man is so evil, it's frightening to believe. And it's so amazing to me that I'm the only one in the media who even picks up on the story. And I want to thank Rowan Scarborough for writing it. And if men strive together and hurt a woman with child, so that her fruit depart, and yet no harm follow, he shall surely be fined. As surely be fined, according as the woman's husband shall lay upon him. And he shall pay as the judges determine. But if any harm follow, then thou shalt give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. That's called an eye for an eye. It's an Exodus. It's the foundation. It's the building block of America. It's the very building block that the vermin in the administration are using jackhammers on every day of their filthy lives. From the time these filthy drug addicts entered college right until now, they're jackhammering our nation. They're jackhammering the granite of the Ten Commandments. There's nothing more that I can say other than that's what's going on. So I have this little radio show. I'm insignificant in the world of politics. We're all insignificant in radio. We think we're significant, but we're insignificant. We're very insignificant. We have no power whatsoever. The only thing we have is access to the truth and the ability to transmit what we perceive to be valuable and truthful for those of you who take the time out of a busy life to listen to us. That's all we have, but we're insignificant otherwise. Nothing. We mean nothing. We have no power. A mere congressman has more power than we do. We have no power whatsoever, and we have the most corrupt, filthy government in American history. It is so dirty that it makes the banana republics look noble by comparison. It's so filthy it makes the ex-Soviet Union look like a shining beacon on the hill. That's how dirty this country has become in the hands of your president and his sorority. If you want to comment on the eulogy I just gave for the SEAL Team 6, which many of you are calling about, some of you are so worked up it's not funny, go ahead and make our day. And then I'll give you all the news, views, and reviews that are valuable.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Extra, extra, hear all about it. Obama Stonewall's SEAL Team 6 helicopter crash probe watchdog says, we have to thank Larry Klayman, who's been at this a long time, and he cannot get any information from this corrupt administration. Even though a judge ordered this corrupt administration to turn over documents in the shootdown of that U.S. helicopter that killed all members of, well, some members of SEAL Team 6, this corrupt administration will not turn over the documents. You know, we watch shows about corrupt South American nations. We see shows about drug lords. We see shows where drug lords secretly run the country. We see shows where South American nations are in the grips of a small group of fanatics. And you say, well, it can't happen here. Well, it's happened here right in front of your eyes. It happened right in front of your eyes, and it's happening right now. He's on another vacation now in Martha's Vineyard. He gave his lowest speech in the history of his presidency yesterday on the nuclear deal with Iran, and he ran off to Martha's Vineyard to be with the billionaires and millionaires that he bashed 2 seconds before. Again, his usual fare, which is deception and demagoguery. And then he accused anyone who opposed the Iran deal of committing treason. It's beyond comprehension how he gets away with it. But let me go to the callers, because many of us see the truth but wait. You know, there's a saying, God sees the truth but waits. It was actually a short story by Thomas Mann that I remember reading when I was a wee undergrad in college. God sees the truth but waits. It's stuck with me ever since. And I guess God's been waiting ever since I've been 18 years old, because I haven't seen any justice yet. Makes you wonder where God is. Nietzsche wrote, God is dead. And I think maybe God is not dead, but he's abandoned the earth. He's given up on man. But I won't go down that road again. I did this Tuesday, and I don't want you to think I'm depressed. I'm not depressed. I'm just very pissed off. I'm extremely angry. I'm beyond angry. I'm agitated. That's all. It's that simple. Sometimes it sounds like depression, and maybe it borders on it. I'm not apologizing if I get depressed once in a while. So what? It's part of the human condition. But no, this is not depression. This is something different. This is seething rage. When I read the names of those Navy SEALs in the Army, members of the Army who were killed in that helicopter, and I realized this government is hiding something, they're involved. It means they were involved. It means they either they were directly involved, or they know that the Afghan National Security Forces were involved and don't want the world to know. And in either case, they're committing a crime. Whoever in the Pentagon is covering this up is part of the crime and the cover-up. And when we have a president like Donald Trump, when Donald Trump becomes president, I'm going to make sure that whoever did this is arrested, tried, and they're punished to the full extent of the law. It's the one thing I'm going to ask him. I don't really want anything from the presidency. He's not my friend. I know him from Florida a couple of times. He apparently likes me, but he likes everyone in the media who likes him. But if he becomes president, and if I get to see him again over a salad in Florida, I'm going to ask him only one favor, and it's not for me. It's for the families of the SEAL Team 6 who were executed by somebody in this administration, as sure as I'm sitting here. Let's take some calls. WDRC Radio. Rob, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. Thanks for having me. I remember the day this happened. I'm sitting with my partner. I'm a retired cop, and my partner served in the Marines. And he's right away shaking his head. He goes, no. He says, that's not right. He says, no way would all those highly trained men be riding in the same aircraft in a combat zone when it's a non-combat mission. And as we kept listening and talking about it, he says, you watch. In a few days or weeks or so, they're going to come out and say, oh, they got the men that did this, and wouldn't you know they did it? How the heck are they going to know who shot down that thing from these cowards hiding in the woods? It's amazing. It's disgusting. I got goosebumps when you started doing it. I was driving. I had to pull over, and I did put my hand over my heart. Doc, I've been on you for 3 months. I was sold after 3 minutes. Keep up the good work. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thanks for you. You can hear the man has steel in his heart. You see, the names, just the names themselves of the SEALs, I got moved because the names were the names of Americans. They were just American names from American cities. I didn't hear the name of anyone from Manhattan. I didn't hear the name of anyone from Hollywood, California. I didn't hear the name of anyone from Marin County, California. I didn't hear a name from anyone from any of the other Porn Belt cities. No, they're too busy mocking the military. They're too busy supporting, well, why go down the litany? I've written about it. I've talked about it. It's not going to make my point any stronger. You kind of get the picture, don't you? Who are the men who keep this country from disappearing altogether? You kind of get the picture. Like the white cop who was killed by the black thug the other day in Nashville, Tennessee at another traffic stop. I didn't hear Obama give a speech about white cops being killed in the streets of America. Instead, he flew off to Martha's Vineyard to be with the billionaires and millionaires that he bashed 2 minutes before. I didn't hear any eulogy for the white cop. By the way, a former military man with two children who was executed at a traffic stop. I didn't hear one word from any of the upstanding civilians in the White House. Not one word, not one mention of that cop or any other cop who's being killed in a new epidemic of cop killing fostered, in my humble opinion, by Barack Obama, Eric Holder, and whatever that one is, that sweatsuit, that thing in a sweatsuit who lost weight. I don't remember his name. That ugly thing in a sweatsuit who went on a Jenny Craig, and now he goes in and out of the White House. Birds of a feather flock together, that's all I can say. I never thought I'd wake up to the day that a street rat like that would be invited in and out of the White House 100 times. I never thought I'd see the day that a street rat like that would pick the next Attorney General of the United States of America. I never thought this country would fall to this level. Never. I never thought it could happen here. Okay, whatever. Whatever. Line 3, Kurt, WBAP in Dallas, where the show is thriving, booming in Dallas. For some reason, Dallas loves Michael. Go ahead, please.
Well said. A street rat is better than Al Sharpton because a street rat doesn't know what he's doing. That street rat that goes in and out of the White House knows what he's doing. When I heard that eulogy, Mr. Savage, I turned it up very loud in my Tony neighborhood. If my wife would have been here, she would have scrutinized me and said, turn that down, you're going to disturb the neighbors. The Tony neighbors heard it loud and clear. Those men of honor that were slaughtered either by Afghan national commanders or maybe in cahoots with ours, I don't know. But I do know that special forces don't travel around in a Chinook all bundled up. And that we all knew that there was something wrong with that from the get-go. And I read the slapdash investigation report, all BS. And let me tell you something. I stood straight up when I heard those men's names with the taps behind loudly portrayed in my backyard across my neighborhood, and it brought tears to my eyes, and I will always fight for their honor. And you know what else it says in the Old Testament? Expose the wicked and raise the righteous. And you just raised the righteous. Now, God, expose the wicked.
Yes, sir. There's no way to add to your statement. And I thank you for the call. No, I knew there was something wrong, and when it happened, I had many discussions on this show with people who were working for the government who would call and say I was wrong. I had never heard of an entire SEAL team being put on an old, slow-flying Vietnam-era helicopter. They're never sent into a Chinook, into a combat zone, so far as I know. They usually sent in fast attack helicopters and split into two teams. They were sent to their deaths by somebody in this country, in cahoots with the Afghan national who were on the ground there. That's what many people think, including the parents of some of the dead. You know, I dedicated a novel to this. It's not for sale. I'm not selling a book. I know it becomes embarrassing when you have competitors in the business who are so jealous of my ability to produce so much. But I wrote A Time for War, my second novel in the Jack Hatfield series. And if you remember the novel, it opens in the Tangi Valley, Afghanistan. The entire novel begins with a Chinook helicopter carrying a squad of Navy SEALs, which suddenly plummets to earth. Next scene is a car driven by FBI agents tailing a suspicious vehicle, which is mysteriously rendered immobile in San Francisco. Cisco. Do you know what just happened in the news? Do you remember reading about the Jeep Cherokee that was rendered inoperable while it was running? How come I was able to write about cars being rendered inoperable in the novel A Time for War, published in 2013? Because I was ahead of my time, because I foresaw what could be done from remote locations with the new technologies available. So, who really killed the SEALs? Oh, we don't know. It's not important. Just a bunch of crackers. Just a bunch of crackers. Just some white boys from the heartland of America. Not really important. Not really important to the great man in the White House or the First Lady. Nah, not important at all to Joe Biden, who would be president. Well, anyway, I did what I had to do. And I don't know what I want to do now. I don't really don't want to talk about the debates tonight. Is that what you want to talk about? You could turn on Fox News, which you're doing anyway. I mean, we're going to all watch it. Everyone can't wait. As soon as my show is over, everyone's going to flip the TV on. I get it. I'll probably watch it. What am I going to see? I'm going to see 10 guys up there. I'm going to see 3 people from Fox News. We know who the slime ball is already. We know it's that ludicrous creature who I call Meatloaf Jr., Chris Walachinsky. I mean, Chris Wallace. Who's going to try and be the wise guy with the, you know, I don't like people who sneer in the media. Let me start with that. I've always hated people who had a permanent sneer on their face. This guy was born with a sneer on his face. And I don't like him. And he said the other day he's going to throw a hairball at Donald Trump. Well, we'll see who eats the hairball last. I think it'll be Walachinsky along with the rotten meatloaf his father left behind. So we'll all wait and see. But what are you really going to see? Okay, so you're going to get a question. Martha Washington is going to pretend she's in the middle. Walachinsky is going to make believe he's wild and crazy. They ought to give him the Czech pants and let him speak Polish at the same time. That's an old joke. He's the wild, crazy card. Then, of course, there's the only journalist on the panel, Brett Baer, who I respect because he actually does investigative reporting of the real McCoy. So they ask a question, and then each of the guys, 10 minutes... 1 minute each, bum, bum, and all we want to hear is Donald Trump. We're going to hear nine people, and all we want to hear is Donald Trump. And all the non-entities are all going to speak. How are you going to have a debate? What kind of debate can it be with 10 people up there and 3 moderators? How is that even possible? If you do the permutations and combinations, which is simple math, of 10 candidates and 3 moderators, tell me what the mathematics are on that with regard to how many questions and answers can be asked in the time allotted for the debate. The answer is about 2, if that many. How could you even listen to that? Yet we're all going to watch it. I don't know what's going to come of it. I don't know how Trump's going to sit there with his mouth shut while the Lilliputians are going to say things that he knows are worthless. America's looking for a leader. America wants someone who speaks the plain truth. And America wants someone who's run a successful business. It's a slam dunk. If the election were held today, he wins 80-20 against anyone the Democrats can dig up out of the sewer. End of story. But we all know elections in America are complicated, Byzantine, and possibly completely fraudulent. It's that simple. All right, let's move on. A few more callers, then we'll move on to other topics. WBAP, Nick, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. I appreciate your eulogy there. I come from a large military family. My brother's a retired Navy officer. He's mentioned some things to me that I'm not allowed to repeat here on the air about things about Navy SEALs. And my question is the government really being wise by doing misleading things towards the lives of Navy SEALs? Are these the people they want to be pissing off? They really need to ask themselves that question.
I know what you're saying. I can sort of sense what you're saying, but I wish to God it were true.
Well, I've heard stories from my brother, and these are not guys you want to cross. You do not want to cross a Navy SEAL. And if this comes to light that they've done something to these Navy SEALs and the government's responsible, these guys are not the guys you want to cross.
Well, then, wait a minute. Here's the story. Obama Stonewall SEAL Team 6 helicopter crash probe watchdog says the Obama administration is violating a judge's order, this is yesterday, to turn over documents in the shootdown of a U.S. helicopter, call sign extortion 17, which killed members of SEAL Team 6. So you've got a judge saying turn over the documents, and you've got the corrupt Obama administration and the Defense Department saying we're not producing any documents whatsoever.
Well, and Navy SEALs are very intelligent men, and they could take that information for what it's worth, and if it upsets them, God have mercy on whoever's responsible.
Well, here we go. A Justice Department spokesmouth said there would be no comment beyond its court filing. The Justice Department's lawyers have told the judge that the process of locating relevant documents and removing classified information takes time. In other words, they're stonewalling. It's taken 4 years for them to say drop dead. Attention, Navy SEALs. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-COIN. All right, just a little bit more information from the filing by the lawyer, Mr. Klayman, that I think is important, then we'll move on. There were 17 members of SEAL Team 6 and 5 Naval Special Warfare Ops. Bart the War Dog was on it, 5 Army flight crewmen, including a National Guard and Army Reserve pilot, 3 Air Force personnel, and they were all mustered at the last minute. There was no reason for the mission to begin with, by the way. They were put on a rebuilt, conventional, unarmored CH-47 Chinook. Did you hear me? They were mustered at the last minute. Nobody knows why. The mission itself is controversial to the family members. They were assembled hastily for insertion into Tangi Valley to help Army Rangers capture fleeing Taliban. But the Rangers did not need any rescue. Military officers interviewed during the investigation said they could not recall an IRF ever being sent for such a mission. The Chinook had no Apache escort, as did the Ranger team that enjoyed the element of surprise when it touched down hours earlier. This was a hit. It was an assassination. Somebody in this government set them up for death. And I'm wondering why Harvey Weinstein doesn't do the movie. Where is David Geffen now that we don't need him? Where is Mr. Spielberg?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
In hour number one, I talked about the deaths of the SEAL Team 6 in the helicopter crash in 2011 in Afghanistan. I told you that the government is stonewalling a federal judge's order to turn over all documents in the shootdown of that helicopter. I told you I believe it has all the earmarks of an assassination of SEAL Team 6, the very same team that took down Osama bin Laden prior to their being sent on this mission. I also told you this would make a heck of a movie, but that Weinstein and company will not touch it. What a movie that would be. You know, movies can change mass audiences in so many directions. And as you well know, they spend most of their time swaying audiences to hate America, hate the police, hate the church, hate God, hate the family, etc. What a movie this would make. I can even recommend a novel upon which it could be based, called A Time for War by Michael Savage. But that's not the point of my doing hour one. Hour number two, we're moving to a domestic terrorism event. Article on WorldNet Daily, will Louis Farrakhan be arrested for his call to kill whites? Written by Leo Homan. Preaching directly from the Quran before a packed Baptist church, the Nation of Islam leader, Louis Farrakhan, told his adoring audience that violent retaliation is the only way for American blacks to, quote, rise up and overthrow their white oppressors. Conservative black leaders told WND that they believe Farrakhan's statements went beyond the limits of free speech into the realm of criminal incitement, although a noted constitutional attorney cautioned that prosecuting on these terms would be an uphill battle. Here is what Farrakhan said at Mount Zion Missionary Baptist Church in Miami in a speech that the Muslim preacher posted on his Facebook page early this week. Quoting the Quran, he said, I'm looking for 10,000 in the midst of the million. 10,000 men who say death is sweeter than continued life under tyranny. Farrakhan then launched into a poetic tirade against whites, backed up with Quranic verse. The crowd responded with a standing ovation as the 82-year-old Muslim preacher bathed in the moment. Let's listen to the speech and let me decide. Let me hear what you, the American audience, thinks of the Muslim preacher Louis Farrakhan spewing his racist, hate-filled message on the Savage Nation.
I'm looking for 10,000 in the midst of the million.
Millions.
Midst million. 10,000 fearless men.
Yes, men.
Who say death is sweeter than continued life under tyranny. Death is sweeter than to continue to live and bury our children while white folks give the killer hamburgers. Death is sweeter than watching us slaughter each other to the joy of a 400-year-old enemy. Death is sweet. The Quran teaches persecution is worse than slaughter. Then it says retaliation is prescribed in matters of the slain. Retaliation is a prescription from God to calm the breast of those whose children have been slain.
Or let's turn the hate monger off. You get the overall flavor of Louis Farrakhan. Jack Cashiel, a WND contributor and author of the new book Scarlet Letters, The Ever-Increasing Intolerance of the Cult of Liberalism Exposed, said that the presidency of Barack Obama has resuscitated and breathed new life into hate preacher Farrakhan's ministry, encouraging the hater to spew ever more outrageous racial invective. Cashel told WND the following. He said, the Obama presidency has given the 82-year-old Farrakhan new life. By racializing just about everything he has touched, Obama has raised black paranoia to new heights, and Farrakhan is exploiting that paranoia with potentially lethal consequences. Now, Farrakhan's Miami speech has been going viral on social media. Not a word from the White House or the media on Farrakhan's call to wage jihad on America's police. Do you believe this? Can you believe this is going on in this country right now? Well, of course you can believe it. It goes on every day. It goes on every day. Farrakhan is, let us say, a little less varnished than some in the White House. Let's put it to you that way. A little rougher around the edges. Not as smooth. Not as convincing. But the message is sort of the same as that of Al Sharpton, is it not? What do you think the protests in Ferguson were about? What do you think happened in Baltimore? You think it happened in a vacuum? All right, you get the picture. So I don't have to go on and on. Just give me a little background of what's going on in the United States of America under this administration. 855-400-7282. KSFO Radio. Wes, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's your topic?
Good afternoon. I just wanted to give you a little interesting local knowledge about the fine Marine, not a former U.S. Marine. He will always be a Marine. Sean Bolton gunned down in the street here in Memphis because he happened to step upon a couple of guys doing a drug deal. After he was killed, our black Democratic mayor said, this is another example of guns in the streets. It's not. It's an example of someone on supervised release. The director of the police, Tony Armstrong, asked him after he was taken into custody. He was talking to him, and the perpetrator said to him, Tony Armstrong in a press conference called him a coward and a cold-blooded killer. And the first thing he wanted to tell the police director was, I'm not a coward and I'm not a cold-blooded killer. This is all under the umbrella of Barack Hussein Obama.
I know who's leading. I know who's encouraged this killing of the cops. I know who's encouraging this epidemic. It was Obama. It was Sharpton. It was Eric Holder. We know that. We watched it unfolding for months. I was railing against it. I said this is going to lead to an epidemic of police killings. I know what's going on. But Obama is such a silk smooth operator. He gets away with it.
The congressman, out of 535 men and women, I cannot believe there are less than a handful that aren't colluding with this man. This man is not one of us, and I believe he is an enemy of state of the state. That's my opinion. But this is the manifestation. The only thing that's transparent.
Well, why would you say that just because he's giving Iran the nuclear bomb and telling us it's the equivalent of peace? Why would you say such a thing like that? Isn't he a man of peace who wants peace on earth and goodwill to man? I mean, he's giving Iran the nuclear weapon in order to avoid a nuclear war. How much smarter can you get than that?
The only thing that's transparent about him is that he is a traitor.
All right. I don't think you're alone in that observation, but I thank you. There's nowhere I can go with that. WABC Paul on the issue of the hate preacher, Louis Farrakhan, quoting the Quran. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mr. Savage. What I wanted to say was that the way he's promoting this in a Baptist church, which the Lord of Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit, which is a totally different religion, shows that he wants to try to convert everybody from what they are to his religion. And the other thing I wanted to speak about...
Well, look how far he's gotten under the guise of being a preacher. Look how far he's gotten under that umbrella. Look how far Al Sharpton has gotten calling himself Reverend Sharpton. It's a racket that works, isn't it?
You can go to Chicago, and his mass killing still black and black, and he has his own preaching in all the prisons. So I guess maybe he's trying to get everybody to kill each other so he can bring his Muslim faith into more of these prisons where they're bringing more of these people in.
Someone wrote this, Farrakhan should be marching on Planned Parenthood. It kills far more potential followers than any other entity known.
In New York, we had 30,000 black kids killed in 2014 or 2000.
Farrakhan is spewing the same hate as Hitler, Mao, North Korea, and Iran. And he's within our midst. He gets away with it under the guise of freedom of religion. All right, what can you say about it? This is not all we're going to do. I just wanted you to hear it because I've held it for 2 days now. Many of you never heard the speech, and that many of you never heard about this story at all. And you heard it now. So there you are. And what are we going to do next? We're all just waiting for the debate tonight. I know that. As soon as my show is over, that's all you're going to watch. I understand that. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do because I planned it a couple of days ago. And that is this. At one, at 30 minutes after the hour of the, so we're changing from what we're doing now, SEAL Team 6, Farrakhan's hate speech calling for 10,000 men to become suicide murderers in the United States of America to kill white cops. We're going to go to something lighter. For those of you who are nervous, who are getting upset by the tone of the show, for those of you who can't take the partisanship, for those of you who think it's too strident, for those of you who don't like the tone of the show, I'm going to have on the show a good friend of mine from Hollywood, Robert Davi, who is an actor. He's been in 200 movies. You've seen him in many movies. He's the tall Italian guy who's played Arab terrorists. He's played mafia guys, hitmen. And he's a great guy, all-around wonderful guy. But he's also a fabulous singer, and he's doing a singing tour. He's going to be joining us. And I think I'm going to just talk with him about, well, I want to know about his show coming up in New York City this weekend. But I want to talk with him because he grew up in New York. I want to ask him what life was like when he was a kid in the streets of Brooklyn. And I want to reminisce with him a little bit about life in America back then. He's a little younger than I am, but he and I get along pretty great. I mean, he cracks me up a lot, which is hard to do. I don't laugh very easily. He makes me laugh. I love going out with him. When we went out in Hollywood a couple of months ago, he's a tall guy. He's like 6'5". This guy's enormous. He's big. His hands are the size of like meatloaf, like plates of meatloaf. Funny chain. I just love this guy. I mean, he plays the part. If you were to do central casting of a murderer, it would be my friend. But he's not that at all. He's a gentle guy, wonderful guy. So we go to a restaurant. You know, my family, he's there with a lady friend. And we're in this crowded restaurant in Beverly Hills. Naturally, I would assume everyone in there is a super Weinstein liberal. I mean, to the left of Mao Zedong would probably be an understatement of the mentality of the people in there. Well-dressed, nice, nicely spoken, but if you actually scrape the skin of their veneer and got to their politics, you'd hear things that would make your hair stand up. But anyway, we're in a crowded restaurant. Next to us is a table, two tables right near us. So a family member who's dating a young woman who grew up on a ranch in the West, who was shooting guns at age 5, I pointedly said to her, can you tell us about the time you shot that coyote who was threatening your dog? So this little blonde girl gets, oh, yes, she says, yes, I just picked that gun up on the porch. And she said, I beat it on I just killed him. Well, you should see what happened at the tables around us. And then Davi got the joke of where we were going with this, and I gave him a wink. So we started talking about things along the lines of extreme, as far right as you can get. And we did that just to make the people lose their... Some of them was celebrating an anniversary or whatever. We didn't mean to disturb them, but I think they cut their anniversary short. So he'll be with us. I hope he heard this part of it. In a few minutes after, 30 minutes after the hour, I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. It is the Savage Nation, and you are now the show, 855-400-728. So before I move on, we have to play a soundbite. The woman behind the Iran deal is a lifetime left-wing anti-American fanatic, in my opinion. Her name is Wendy Sherman, former social worker, left-wing operative, all-around wobbly, worked for Jimmy Carter. This is the woman who negotiated, so-called, with Iran. Here she supports the fact that the agreement is secret and no one can see it. This is classic communism. This is classic Sovietism. This is classic Obamaism in clip number 6.
My opinion is that it is in the United States national security interest for there to be a comprehensive safeguards protocol and that those protocols remain confidential. That is in our national security interest. I think that the system that has been put in place that maintains these as confidential documents between the IAEA and the countries with which it operates under the Comprehensive Safeguards Agreement is appropriate.
Do you understand how communism works? Don't you get it? What do you think? They all scream and yell and say, screw you, I'm not giving it to you. What you get is you get devils like her who come up with long language like this to tell you that the agreement with Iran is secret, it'll always be secret, and it's in your best interest not to ask anymore. We are living in a putative dictatorship under the... Okay, I'll stop right there. We're living in a putative dictatorship. I'll leave it at that. I don't have to embroider any further than that. Everywhere you turn, they're stonewalling the American people, whether it's on the deaths of SEAL Team 6, who it looks like to me was set up, or the Iran deal. It is a dictatorship, a putative dictatorship. What else do we have on the sound? Okay, let's go to clip 15. I think you'll know immediately who this is in clip 15. Let's play it.
It is an attack. You look at beautiful Kate, and you look at, you know, what's going on in, like in San Francisco and Jameel and so many people being killed and hurt badly. And people are coming through the border that are really bad hombres and bad dudes. And these are people that Mexico doesn't want, and other countries where they come from, they don't want them. And in my opinion, and the opinion of others, they force them over them. And why should they take care of them? Let the United States put them in their prison. They just walk right in. Another 4 years, another 8 years of this kind of stuff, and we're not going to have a country.
That's all. Now you know why he's loved by the people and hated by the politicians. Because he's saying it like it is. We all know this is true. We're not talking about the hardworking men and women from south of the border. Nobody is saying that. But we all know that amongst the hardworking men and women from south of the border, the countries of origin are dumping the worst of the worst on us. They want us to take care of them. And he's right. And we're paying the price for it. 855-400-7282. When I come back, we'll have a little lighter moment here on the show. We'll talk to Robert Davi. We'll ask him about his upcoming show in New York. And then after that, Well, the games begin. The center stage and the clowns, the whole thing begins right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're moving to a lighter note now. My good friend Robert Davi joins us from somewhere in the world. Robert, where are you right now? L.A., New York, or Bulgaria?
I'm in Manhattan. I just got back from Italy 2 weeks ago, though.
Okay, so that counts. So you're taking Manhattan. Aren't you performing this Saturday somewhere in New York?
Eisenhower Park at the Harry Chapin Theater, Ed Mangano's Summer Concert Series.
But what are you going to do? Are you going to sing Sinatra or something else?
I'm doing my 100th anniversary tribute to Sinatra, a 30-piece band, and I've got comedian Dave Koenig, and it's going to be an amazing evening.
So, Robert, let me ask you something. You grew up in New York. You were born, you're younger than I am, but it says you were from Astoria, New York. I thought you were from Brooklyn.
No, Astoria, Queens. I was born in Astoria, Queens, and then when I was five, we moved to Long Island, Huntington, Dix Hills.
Oh, so you became rich at that point.
No, are you kidding? My dad worked three jobs. We were lucky. They paid, you know what their mortgage was? We had two.
Wait, let me guess, $125 a month?
No. My godfather's father came from Sicily. They were all friends, and they bought a bunch of land out in Long Island. They built the house. My father's mortgage was $65 a month for a two-story brick house and 2 acres.
They built it themselves with their own hands?
They helped build it, and it was a two-story. And they, you know, these were Italians, the bricklayers, and they came and they built that house. So So we weren't rich, believe me. My dad worked three jobs. He was with Grumman Aerospace. He was also.
Let me ask you, Robert, people look at you in the movies and they see a you know, like a rough looking guy. And yet you are, they sent you to opera, to sing opera?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had a love for that and they supported that. You know, they were very supportive of the arts. My dad was a bit skeptical, because he tried to do that and was the kind of guy, Michael, that, you know, to follow your dream was a little scary for him. You know, they wanted something more tangible. Much like Sinatra's father wanted him to get a Sicilian guy, wanted him to get a regular job. That was my dad, you know. But my mom had that dream for you. And once I was doing it, and they, you know, I did my first film with Sinatra in 1977, and I started, that was early on. They were very supportive of me, letting me take voice lessons and acting lessons and all of that.
It's the opposite of me. When my father caught me playing the flute in the basement in Queens, he went crazy. I can't repeat on the air what he called me, but he may as well have taken the flute and broken it over his knee. And that was the end of my musical career. I mean, you're lucky you had a mother who at least supported your artistic nature.
Yes, the mother supported that artistic nature. Although my dad, one time I remember playing his guitar down in the basement, and they were calling me up for dinner. And I didn't come up for dinner, and he took the guitar and threw it down the basement, broke the...
Hey, there you go. So I knew we had something in common.
When you told me about the flute broken, I immediately related to that image, let me tell you, Michael.
So I keep mentioning every time I see you in L.A., which hopefully will be more in the near future, because, as you know, I have a place down there now, and I'll be down there on a regular basis. Every time we go to dinner, we talk and we chat, we have a good time. And I keep mentioning the one movie you were in that I really loved you in, and it was a small part, Kill the Irishman. And you keep saying, no, that wasn't the best one. What was the most, of all the gangster parts you've played, and I don't want to stereotype you, what is your favorite role?
The gangster parts I played?
Well, yes.
I've done a bunch of movies. I mean, The Iceman came out a year ago. That was a terrific part. Good movie with, you know, James Franco and Michael
Shannon. Oh, I love that. That was a great movie. That was terrific.
You know?
Right, I saw you. I saw that. That was terrific. But before that, was there another role that you felt was a signature role?
A signature? Well, besides the Bond film or something like that, or Goonies? Or Die Hard.
What did you in the? Remind the audience, Robert Davi. What were you in the James Bond movies?
I was the Colombian drug lord, Fran Sanchez, in License to Kill. And the funny part about that story, Michael, is the character's name was Fran Sanchez. Now, Cubby Broccoli, who came from Astoria, Queens, produced another New York boy, produced all the Bond films. Now, Sinatra, me doing my first film with him, Fran Sanchez, F.S. Frank Sinatra, Fran Sanchez, same amount of letters. Richard Maybaum and Cubby were doing a joke on Sinatra because I was friends with him, and he always wanted to play a Bond villain. That's how they came out with the name Fran Sanchez and License to Kill.
Amazing.
That's an inside story on all of that.
So what movie were you in with Sinatra? Were you in The Detective? What movie was it?
No, that was before my time. I'm a little younger than that. No, it was called Contract on Cherry Street, 1977. It was his return to film after about 8 years of not doing anything on movies. And it was a special for NBC. And me and Jay Black from Jay and the Americans played two brothers, the Sinatros, Mickey and Tommy Sinatros, two Greek hitmen.
Amazing. Well, I didn't know that you're in that Sinatra movie. I'm going to have to look for it on one of the, rent channel type of thing. But Robert, how did you get into singing? Because singing is your love right now. You trained as a youngster in opera because you had you liked it. You had a good voice. Your mother, thank God, supported that. So you were trained formally as an opera singer, but now you're doing very successful tours, sort of a Frank Sinatra revival. This is your love, isn't it?
Well, Michael, you know, you got to realize that as a teenager in high school, I won first place New York State School Music Association solo competition. I had I had a very recognizable good voice as a young kid. Then I was put with an opera guy on Long Island, Michael Signorelli, and then I went to Rotito Gobbioletta, one of the great opera singers of all time. I studied with him. I studied with another guy, Samuel Margolies, one of the great teachers at the Metropolitan Opera, who taught Merrill, one of our great baritones. So at an early age, I had such huge formal training for opera, as did Sinatra. And several years ago, when I directed a film that you liked called The Dukes, I sang one song in it. And then I asked the chairman of Disney Music, who should I study with? He said, there's one guy, Gary Katona, who's the best guy doing the voice today. He really goes back to the old bel canto technique. So I worked with him every day for 3 years, getting the voice, the muscles, getting everything in shape for it. Tackle this American Songbook. And now the United Nations has chosen me to do Sinatra's tribute. I did it at the General Assembly. I'll do it again in September for their 70th anniversary.
Beautiful.
I've been in Italy for the Voice of Italy. I've toured Australia, Latvia, Sweden, Budapest, all around.
I know. It's amazing. I mean, people don't know how vast your success is as a singer. I want to make it personal, Robert. You know I do radio, obviously. That's why you're on my show. And you know that I have a very good voice. And I've even asked you this question. At my age, could I learn how to sing?
Yes, you have a natural timbre to your voice. I would say, I told you, you're in L.A. now, go to Gary Katona. He's a voice builder. He'll get that muscle, the placement, everything down. And, you know, if you can hum a tune, you can sing.
Figaro A, Figaro A, Figaro A, Figaro A.
You may be the Yiddish repertoire, you know, for the machine. I know Rabbi.
Volare, oh, no, I'm not good. I got to get that voice right. Volare, oh, that's a tough song to sing, by the way.
Well, Domenico Martunia did it initially. Volare, and Dean Martin did a great rendition of it. That's my next.
Robert, here's what I want to do. When I come to L.A., I want to meet the voice teacher. I want to learn how to sing Pagliacci. That's all I want to know. I want to get the clown costume, the makeup, and I want to sing Pagliacci before I die.
Original.
And I want to put it on YouTube.
Would that that would be tremendous, huh? Would you get a big orchestra to back you up?
I'll do anything you suggest. You're going to tell me what to do.
I mean, if we shoot the music video in the costume, you got to have a real orchestra up there, and you doing this. Pagliacci would be like a sensation. It'd be like Gangnam Style on YouTube, over a billion hits.
So, Robert, I know this is a crazy question, and you know that you and I have fun when we get together. You know, do you ever meet people, I'm talking to my audience now, that, like when you were a kid, people remember goofing around with people where you kind of were happy all the time when you were just sharing words back and forth, and they made you happy and you made them happy. You and I do that for each other. We reminisce, we goof around, we joke about Hollywood, we both joke about the liberals. I was telling the story before you came on about the last time we all ate in Beverly Hills in that crowded restaurant, and the family member was with a young lady, and I primed her to talk about shooting a coyote with a rifle, and how the table next to us left the restaurant, and then you got the joke, and then you started doing stuff like from the movies, and then the next table got up uncomfortably.
Yeah, but we didn't want anybody around us. You know, the older Sicilians knew how to clear out a room real quick, too.
So when are you going to be in San Francisco?
I don't know. We got to hang. I got to do a show.
You know, nobody ever comes here. This is like the end of the empire. Everyone goes to New York, L.A., Chicago, Miami. Nobody comes here. It's like a dead end. This is like the last stop on the IRT.
But I tell you, New York, you know, you get such a, you know, you're a New York boy at heart. You come back to this city here. Long Island is so beautiful. And, you know, Eisenhower Park there. I mean.
Where is Eisenhower Park on Long Island where you're going to perform this Saturday?
It's East Meadow on Long Island there. We're Hofstra, near Hofstra. But it's three times bigger than Central Park. Eisenhower Park is huge.
Well, wait a minute. You're performing. Okay, so in that park, is there an amphitheater, a theater? How does that work? Or it's open air? What is it?
Yes, it's out in the. It's a beautiful Harry Chapin Lakeside Theater. It's the Lakeside Theater. It's a gorgeous setting. And you bring your blanket or your chair. I had 13,000 people last year, Michael, 11,000 the year before. I'm hoping we get 15,000.
Unbelievable. Yeah. You know, when you mention New York, you know, I live on the West Coast for so long. You know what I crave right now? And I'm going to be in New York, God willing, in about a week and a half. I'm going to visit for a week. You know what I want to smell? I want to smell the ailanthus trees. There's a certain smell coming off the foliage this time of year. You know how the trees, when the heat, the stickiness, there's just an odor, aroma comes off the trees and the way the crickets sound and the birds at this time of year. I really miss it. I'll be honest with you.
You got to come out to Long Island because I stay sometimes at the Ohika Castle. A guy named Gary Melius rebuilt that. He's one of the great Americans because he took a thing which was the second biggest home in America. Otto Hermann Kahn built it in the 20s, 1915. They let it go, and he got it back more than several years ago and restored it. But it's what they used. Baz Luhrmann might use to do The Great Gatsby.
That's where they filmed it.
And they filmed the blank space, the Taylor Swift. If you want to see what that looks like, here it is. It was 10 minutes from my house. I never knew it was there till a couple of years ago when Ed Mangano brought me out for the first show, and they put me up at Ohica. It's a wonder of American. I mean, it's the architecture and the grounds. It's just incredible. You come out.
You know, that's this Saturday. Just one time. What time is the show, Robert?
The show starts at about 7 o'clock. I've got the comedian, and then it's in full swing about 8. So, but they get there early, get your place on the.
Unbelievable. But there's no admission for it, right? It's just walk in?
Ed Mangano they have sponsors that come.
No, but I'm saying it's free to the. Is it free to the public or not?
Free to the public. Free to the public.
Oh, well, that should attract the crowd, especially my audience. Joking. Hey, Robert, here's a role for you in the future. And before we go, you know, Donald Trump is my favorite candidate so far.
Yes, me too.
Good. So I'm thinking that when he becomes president, maybe someone could do a movie about Chapo Guzman escaping from the prison in Mexico. You could play Chapo Guzman.
That Ridley Scott's already doing
it. No. Are you going to be in it?
Who knows? I mean, you know, that. Who knows? But. The Ridley Scott, they already announced, I think it was Ridley Scott, I remember reading, that someone's already doing the escape of that. But I did that guy, you know, in Bond. They learned from us. I escaped in the Bond film, you know. We had to, you got to watch that. The opening, you see how I escape in that. It's very clever.
No, I see how you escape from Astoria to become world famous. That I can see.
Well, that was, and you know, Astoria is like the spot to be in these days, I'm told.
Isn't that amazing? It was downtrodden when I was a kid, and now it's very fashionable. What isn't in New York? It's so expensive. Robert Davi, Saturday, Eisenhower Park, East Meadow, Long Island, and points around the world. Robert, thanks for being with us. Good luck this Saturday. Hope to see you when I'm in Hollywood in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Bye now. It is the Savage Nation. It's 48 minutes after the hour. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. It is the Savage Nation. So I shifted gears. I had my friend Robert Davi on, and I'm just reading his bio. I didn't know he studied Shakespeare. I didn't know he studied under the wing of Lee Strasberg and Stella Adler. I had no idea. You see, behind any success, there's a lot of hard work. I didn't know he really was a formally trained guy. I see the name Stella Adler. It's very, you know who Lee Strasberg is, the great acting coach? Lee Strasberg played Meyer Lansky in the Godfather movie. That was Lee Strasberg, which amazing. I didn't, how good he did. But Stella Adler, I have a funny story about that in the minute that remains in this hour before we get back to normal, boring programming about politics, death, and dying of America. I had a friend. I haven't talked to him in 20 years. All around, he was a friend of mine. Let's put it that way. He wanted to be an actor. So he went to Stella Adler at that time, and he came back crestfallen. I said, what happened? He said, she told me, she put a cork in my mouth, and she told me to walk around the studio all day with the cork in my mouth, this big cork. He never went back to the acting class. I just laughed about it because that's the first thing an actor must have to learn, is how to shut their mouths. I'm thinking maybe that's the way to teach someone how to be a talk show host, is get giant corks, like a number 7 cork, and I'll have a school for would-be talk show hosts and put a cork in their mouth. Not a bad idea. Anyway, when I return in the next hour, it will not be the debates. I can't do it. It's all over the place. How much can you take of it? Right?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Welcome to The Savage Nation, hour number three. Of course, no one is listening. Everyone is now tuned on the television to watch the second-tier candidates make fools of themselves, answering no questions from non-entity interviewers. And the main ring appears in an hour, as you well know. Everyone will shift to television then, obviously. And no one's listening to me right now. I think the audience has diminished to like 12 people across the country. But I have an hour to do. I'm going to do it. So in the first hour, the story was Obama stonewalls probe into deadly SEAL Team 6 helicopter crash. Huge story. We covered that. Then we covered Louis Farrakhan calling for outright its murder in the United States of America. Not one word from the sterling creatures in the White House. So I'm going to move to something else, which is food. An article came out this morning that I want to share with you. Regularly eating spicy foods associated with a lower risk of death, British Medical Journal study suggests. I didn't know that. I figured that it would have killed you faster because of burning out your gut or something. The mouth-burning, eye-watering, and cough-inducing sensations that come with eating spicy foods might make some people feel like they're dying, but in reality, eating spicy food could reduce their risk of death, new research reveals. People who ate spicy food daily were 14% less likely to die during a long-term observational study conducted by a team of researchers at the Chinese Academy of Medical Sciences than those who ate spicy foods less than once a week. Well, all right, let's stop right there. First of all, the Chinese Academy of Medical Sciences, I wouldn't put right up there with the top tier, so number one. The study included 500,000 participants in the China Kadoori Biobank. But I will caution you, it does not demonstrate causation. The authors even say that. And then they always need more money for further work. That's the thing about research. Always they need further work, more research. So people who were eating, hot foods with capsaicin, red pepper, which contains capsaicin, the main active component in chili peppers, know that, it's pretty good for them. But I'd be very cautious with high doses of capsaicin, I'll tell you that. But the fact is that chili peppers are the most commonly used spices, not only in this study, but in most spices around the world. The other types of spices also increased along with that of chili peppers, could contribute to the observed inverse association with death. Nonetheless, they also note that capsaicin has been extensively researched and associated with anti-obesity, antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer, and anti-hypertensive effects, as well as improving glucose homeostasis. They also note that the antimicrobial function of capsaicin could impact people's gut microbiota. That's in gut microbiota. In plain English, let me boil it down. Red peppers kill bacteria. There's an interesting study. Years ago when I was in the herbal business, I'm talking 30 years ago, I was surprised to find that one of the more successful non-medical treatments for ulcers, duodenal ulcers, was exactly that, taking capsaicin in capsules. It seems counterintuitive, doesn't it, that spicy foods would hurt the gut? But no, it actually killed the bacteria that caused the ulcers. It was very interesting because, in the old days of medicine, like the 50s, 60s, they used to treat people with ulcers with milk. It was like the worst possible solution to duodenal ulcers was milk because that fostered the growth of bacteria. It shows you how medicine is an ongoing, science. We don't know everything in medicine yet. The positive effects of the chili seem to be stronger in participants who consume fresh chili than those who consume non-fresh spicy foods. All right, you got the story. Oh, wait a minute. In particular, statistically significant inverse association between daily consumption of spicy foods and diabetes appeared in the subgroup. Likewise, alcohol consumption could limit the potential positive impact of spice on health outcomes, the study author suggests. So there goes the study. So that means that if you're eating spicy food and drinking a beer, you're finished. it neutralizes it. Go figure. I would have thought that it would have. No, it didn't. Spice and risk were strong. Did not drink alcohol again. All right, whatever. Last night I went to a Sicilian restaurant, a new one. Little place on the water. I went there twice this week. The food is really good, amazing. Caponata. I never had caponata. I heard about it in New York, but I never had caponata. I thought it was like a little capon. But then I realized that they were not politicians reduced to a food plate. Some kind of eggplant. I love eggplant myself. I'm just I'm filibustering the debates right now. And in order to filibuster the debates, I don't have to go to the news. Or you're not going to... You want to go to the news? You want any? Raise your hands if you want the news. Okay. Attention, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to michaelsavage.com for August 6th, the year of our Lord, 2015. Headline, top right. ISIS executes 19 girls for refusing to have sex. Gee, not one word from the National Organization for Women. ISIS fanatics have executed 19 women for refusing to have sex with the maniacs, the murderers, the sadists in ISIS. Not one word from the American feminist phonies. Here's another story for those of you who care. Iraqi Christians held for months after crossing Mexican border. Obama waves in anyone but Christians. Muslim, come on in. Criminal, come right in. Worker, come right in. Christians, stay behind the barbed wire. Here's another story on my website. Why hasn't Louis Farrakhan been arrested yet, asks PJ Media. Answer, I'll let you figure it out. Michael Savage newsletter, there's nothing conservative about shearing the killing of a lion. Let me read that to you, because I was offended this week when the greatest man in the history of broadcasting, who is an embarrassment as far as I'm concerned, went on and on putting down Cecil the Lion and making those who protect endangered species seem like fools. Shame on him. I mean, he should know better. This is a guy who's been lucky for so long that he thinks that when diarrhea comes out of his mouth, it's roses. In today's issue, the story of the slaughter of Cecil the Lion by an American hunter continues to dominate conversation as people debate what it reveals about the West's values and priorities. Ever the individualist, Dr. Savage has championed animal rights since he began in radio. He was disgusted when he heard a self-described, quote, conservative, joking about the lion's death. He said that that attitude was one of the reasons young people don't listen to the Republican Party. Savage said, I got sick this morning listening to some oaf laughing about the death of Cecil the Lion. Then he was laughing at young people in New York who are projecting images of endangered species on the wall of a building. This oaf, the stereotypical ugly old fat dumb white male, went on and on about how we shouldn't care about endangered species, that they're just animals. I was so infuriated. How can someone pull that shtick in 2015 at this late stage in human evolution? How can they be so insensitive to the world in which we live? That viewpoint that you can do whatever you want to animals went out when Teddy Roosevelt was president. Teddy Roosevelt was a Republican, a big game hunter, and a man's man. He also initiated conservation in America. He created the first national parks. No wonder young people don't listen to conservatives. It's a bigger world than left and right. That's in my newsletter. 855-400-7282. Next story. Obama stonewalls SEAL Team 6 helicopter crash probe, watchdog says. Next story. Barack Obama's lowest moment yet from PJ Media. They say his speech yesterday in Iran was the lowest moment in his career yet. Here's John Kerry saying rejecting the deal would be screwing the Ayatollah. FBI investigation of Hillary's emails is a criminal probe. Nonsense. Nonsense. The reason the FBI stepped in is to cover it up. By the way, why do I say that? You think I want to say that just to be a wise guy? They're investigating Hillary's emails as a criminal probe. Why? It's to get on top of it and then say there is no criminal action here. Next case, let's move on. I told you that's what's going to come of this. I told you that 4 months ago, that she ordered the FBI through her friends in government to investigate her. This is how it's done in the ex-Soviet Union. They triangulate the opposition by saying, whoa, let's investigate that. Let's send out the KGB to investigate these charges against this high member of the Politburo who would be president. Or chairman of the Soviets, okay? And then they investigate it, and the KGB comes up with a clean bill of health saying there's absolutely no evidence that there was any criminal action whatsoever. Next case, move on, nothing to see here. I mean, the FBI investigated Solyndra a number of years ago, right? Remember they moved right in after Salinger went bankrupt after taking $500 million in federal loans? They declared bankruptcy, and all of the gangbangers who were in Salinger in suits and ties laughed all the way to the Swiss banks on their yachts in the Mediterranean. Remember the FBI was sent in to investigate that collapse of Salinger? You never heard anything after that, did you? You're never going to hear anything from this either, other than there was no, you know, that there was no criminal activity. That's the way it works in the Soviet USS of A. That's the way things work in the United Soviet States of America. Here's another little story for you. Urine-corroded lamppost falls in street, nearly hits driver. What city is this? Urine-corroded lamppost? Where is this? Oh, of course, San Francisco. I was going to say it had to be my city. Urine-corroded San Francisco lamppost falls in street, nearly hits driver. Pee is getting to be a big problem in San Francisco. You're kidding? You think? You think pee is becoming a big problem in this city with the most corrupt politicians since Caligula? The three-story tall lamppost at Pine and Taylor snapped at around 6:30 Monday and landed on a nearby car, almost crushing the driver. Oh, my God. See, urine corroded the lamppost. A perfect storm of conditions rusted out the base of the pole. San Francisco Public Utilities Commission officials say, officials, when they're not stealing money or setting, rigging bids, they look at lampposts and caused it to fall. At the time, the lamppost, which was already old, was damaged by urine and weighed down by an oversized banner. We believe there was some contribution of dog or human urine on the base of the pole, PUC spokesman Tyrone Jouet said. Okay, yeah, right. That's all. But they won't stop the bums from peeing on the lampposts. No, that they won't stop. They're the sacred cow of San Francisco. The poor homeless people. The word homeless itself is a communist term. What do you mean homeless? Where's it written in the Bible or anywhere else, or Declaration of Independence or the Bill of Rights, that thou shalt have a home, that the government owes you a home? Where's it written? If you're a drug addict or a bum and you fall in the street, it's your problem, not mine. I didn't put you there. You put yourself there. All right, I'm not saying hurt you, but that's your problem. Clean up your act and go get a job. Take a job as a janitor. Then we won't have so many illegal aliens doing the jobs as janitors because you're not doing them. No one knows. No one there. It's a dead zone. I get it. Here are the winning essays in the Savage Scholarship Contest. They're on michaelsavage.com. I got to tell you, this is a funny story. It meant a lot to me. As I said, I went to this restaurant last night. Small place, new place, and I'm not going to say where. The food was exceptional, better than anything I've had in the Bay Area ever. I went twice this week. I get very enthusiastic. So the owner's wife came up, and she said, well, she's the owner too, I guess. I shouldn't say the owner's wife. That's sexist. I should say the owner came up. The owner came up to me, and she said, one of my customers is your biggest fan. And she went on saying she's a 92-year-old woman who loves you, Michael. She hangs on your every word. And she said that you gave away $100,000 to five deserving college students. I said, yes, I did. She said, that's just wonderful. Do you know that that's the first time anyone ever mentioned that scholarship contest to me ever outside of radio business? And right now, I got to tell you this. It is, I can't even read the thing, 19 minutes after the hour. And that means one thing. That means it's time to pay the bills. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. Welcome back, all of you loyal listeners to the show. You know, this is the test of a talk show host, a day like today at this hour. I got to tell you. Because you know and I know that most people who are into talk radio are very political and they want to listen to even the warm-up debates, and that's all they want to hear. And I'm not doing it. I mean, Fox News is doing it. I'm not doing it. So therefore, I've got to do what I got to do. So I did my own show. And those of you who listened, I think, got rewarded for listening. And this is the toughest hour in the history of radio. But I haven't quit yet. Have you heard me quit yet? Ted on KSFO, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Michael, I loved your conversation with Robert. It was really great. There was a warmth and a genuineness about it. Two significant intellects with vast experiential knowledge just talking. And it was so...
That's very nice to say, because if you look at Robert, you can say, oh, he's just an actor, he's just a this, just a that, you know, tall, dark, with a pockmarked face, you know, he doesn't look like one of the pancake makeup pundits. So you look at me, say, ah, yeah, what does he know? But the fact of the matter is, he and I do have a certain chemistry, and I wouldn't say he's a close friend, but every time I'm in L.A., I call him and we have dinner, and I would consider him a person I enjoy being with.
It comes across, and I think it's at the intellectual level, at the just the way that you discuss things, your ability to talk about various topics effortlessly. And
yeah, no, well, that's the thing. We do. We mesh, and I don't know whether it's a New York thing or the milieu in which we both grew up, because we come from totally different backgrounds, and yet we communicate. And I think that when two men communicate that effectively in this age when people are so atomized and separated from each other, it becomes so, sort of magical. I think that's what you heard.
Absolutely, and it came across full speed. You know, there was a movie back in around, I think around 2010, with Steve Kergan and Rob Brandon. It was called The Trip. And these two guys just basically sat at a restaurant table, set up a camera, and talked. You guys could do that, and people would just listen, I'm telling you.
That would be interesting. Thank you for the suggestion. Years ago, there was my dinner with Andre. That set off the whole conversational type of movie. You know, I've thought about it many times of doing that kind of movie, because just hanging out with someone who knows how to talk, where sparks start to fly and you could just goof around and talk about anything, is kind of interesting in an age when people are afraid to talk, number one, then afraid to express themselves, number two, and three, have nothing to say to begin with. So we could talk about opera, we could talk about songs, politics. I mean, I don't want to divulge his politics, but I think you pretty much know what they are by the fact that I consider him a friend and he's on the show. And how, after he's been in 110 movies and he survives in liberal Hollywood, that tells you the man has what's known in Brooklyn as it's a family show. 855-400-7282. Very soon, the big debates. And then what? What, are you going to have a nervous breakdown after when it's over? Because there's nothing to talk about.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage.
Which killed members of SEAL Team 6 in Afghanistan. This is a huge story. Why is it a huge story? Because the members of SEAL Team 6 are the very members of the team who killed Osama bin Laden. Many of us outside observers believe that someone or someone's inside the Defense Department, some deep plants in the executive office, sent this very same team that killed Osama bin Laden to their deaths. Did you hear what I just said? We are saying that there was treason. We are saying that these men were sent to their deaths on purpose. And this lawsuit, which is being stonewalled by your honest president, he is the most transparent, honest president in Russian history. And this Russian administration is telling the judge's order, well, he's saying to the judge, go wipe the wall with your order. We're not turning over any documents in the shoot down of this U.S. helicopter. It's a very big story. People died. We all believe that SEAL Team 6 had a target on its back. We all believe that people inside the Afghan National Security Forces tipped off the Taliban that night in Tangi Valley. We believe also that someone in the administration also worked with the Taliban through the Afghan National Security Force to kill these men, and we believe that they deserve more than what they've gotten. What is your great, honest, open President Obama, the most honest man in the history of the Soviet Union, hiding? This man is so evil, it's frightening to believe. And it's so amazing to me that I'm the only one in the media who even picks up on the story, and I want to thank Rowan Scarborough for writing it. And if men strive together and hurt a woman with child so that her fruit depart and yet no harm follow, he shall surely be fined. As surely be fined according as the woman's husband shall lay upon him. And he shall pay as the judges determine. But if any harm follow, then thou shalt give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. That's called an eye for an eye. It's an exodus. It's the foundation. It's the building block of America. It's the very building block that the vermin and the administration are using jackhammers on every day of their filthy lives. From the time these filthy drug addicts entered college right until now, they're jackhammering our nation. They're jackhammering the granite of the Ten Commandments. There's nothing more that I can say other than that's what's going on. So I have this little radio show. I'm insignificant in the world of politics. We're all insignificant in radio. We think we're significant, but we're insignificant. We're very insignificant. We have no power whatsoever. The only thing we have is access to the truth and the ability to transmit what we perceive to be valuable and truthful for those of you who take the time out of a busy life to listen to us. That's all we have, but we're insignificant otherwise. Nothing. We mean nothing. We have no power. A mere congressman has more power than we do. We have no power whatsoever, and we have the most corrupt, filthy government in American history. It is so dirty that it makes the banana republics look noble by comparison. It's so filthy it makes the ex-Soviet Union look like a shining beacon on the hill. That's how dirty this country has become in the hands of your president and his sorority. My hat is off to Mr. Klayman. Mr. Klayman is pushing this through a Freedom of Information Act case, but they will not release the records concerning the deaths of Navy SEAL Team 6. If you want to read more about this story, I know your mind is only on the debate. I get it. This is old news to you. We can't be bothered about some heroes who are assassinated by their own government. Nah. Not when they're sending American troops to court-martial who stood up to the Muslim murderer, for example, in Chattanooga. If you want to read the whole story on it, if you have the time, it's from the Washington Times by Rowan Scarborough, and it's linked up on michaelsavage.com. Also in the news, in radio news, which is a big deal to me, maybe not to you, I received an email this morning from my good friend and colleague at Cumulus Media, Dennis Green, who has been one of the supporters of my show from the beginning. And he said, Michael, good news. Can I read it to you? Well, Michael Savage, the committee has spoken, and you were selected for nomination for the Radio Hall of Fame. Well-deserved, and hopefully you will be selected for induction. The story is in today's radio trades. And so that is true. I don't know whether I'll be nominated and inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame. But given that I'm an outsider on the outside of the outsiders, it's anyone's guess who will win in the category in which I've been nominated. But it's sort of honor enough for me, an outsider's outsider, to have been nominated one of those possible winners to the National Radio Hall of Fame. And if I'm not selected by the 400 industry professionals, the show will go on. It's that simple. But thank you, whoever nominated me, because I don't know who it is. It's a secret issue. You know that the show emanates from San Francisco. How many years have I said on this show, San Francisco is the most corrupt city in the United States of America? Have you heard me say that before? 10 times? 100 times? An article came out in the San Francisco Examiner August 5th entitled Public Officials Named the New Findings from FBI Probe of Shrimp Boy Chow. It's a Chinatown probe. And in the prosecution of Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow, a wide array of city and state leaders, including Mayor Ed Lee, were caught up in alleged bribery schemes, pay-to-play plots, campaign fund laundering, and state construction contract rigging. It's astounding. You've got to read the article. If you're from the Bay Area or anywhere else, you've got to see what happens when you have a one-party system, as we have not only in San Francisco, but in the state of California. When you have no checks and balances, when you have no other party with any power, you wind up with a banana republic, which is what I live in here. I want to read you something from this article. The arrest stemmed from a federal indictment alleging, among other things, that Chow headed an organized gang outfit in Chinatown, and that Yee and Jackson committed a series of crimes to further Yee's political ambitions. This would make a heck of a movie. I'm sorry to say make for a good Jack Hatfield novel, but I'm not going to do another one. I'm going to read something from this, which I find to be interesting. The FBI alleged in discovery that Ed Lee, that's the mayor, alleged, took substantial bribes in exchange for favors, notes the filing, which then goes on to say the then Human Rights Commissioner, Nazli Mohajer, and commission staff member Zula Jones facilitated those exchanges. Jones was reported by the FBI, and I'm quoting now, to have said that former Mayor Willie Brown taught Lee to do business according to the filing. Jones reportedly said, and I'm quoting now, quote, "You got to pay to play here. We got it. We know this. We are the best at this game, better than New York. We do it a little more sophisticated than New Yorkers. We do it without the mafia," close quote. The most corrupt city in the United States of America, bar none, is San Francisco. But it has a smoothness, a veneer over it, of calmness, liberalism, above any suspicion, very much like the president himself does. The president has the smoothest varnish I have ever seen on a skilled rhetorician. The smoothest veneer I have ever witnessed in my life, which is how he got where he is and stays where he is. And many people are so gullible as to believe he's telling them the truth, where he poses it as the deal with Iran is either war or peace. In other words, either you take this deal or we go to war. That's not at all the only alternative. War is not the alternative. Negotiation is the alternative. This is not a negotiation. It's a capitulation. What Kerry did here was not negotiate. He capitulated. That's all. That's all he did. He capitulated. He didn't negotiate. One man's opinion is all you're getting here. It's that simple. One man's opinion. It's that simple. But it's the plain truth. I think the plain truth has a big audience in America right now, given the professional liars that we all deal with on a daily basis. I don't have to name them. You know who they are. But nevertheless, I think the plain truth has a market, and you're the market for it. Plain truth is Obama has given away the store, the nuclear store, and it's a bad deal, and it's not a path to peace. It's a path to war. So what is the alternative? It's simple. It's simple. You don't do anything. You raise the sanctions. You don't go to war. You say, sorry, I couldn't sell a deal to Congress. I'm sorry, Mr. Mueller. And we're going to have to now raise the sanctions. We're increasing sanctions on you. We're putting in another oil embargo on you. You can't sell your oil. And we're going to embargo your oil. And we're going to raise the sanctions on you. We're going to take away every dime you have in any bank in the world. We're going to starve you until you do X, Y, and Z. X, you're going to let U.S. inspectors in. You're going to let U.K. inspectors in. You're going to decimate the Natanz nuclear facility. You're going to allow our inspectors into your underground plants. Go down the list. The rest is detail. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 points. Then you have a deal. You go back and then you do the deal from a position of strength, not giving them everything they want and then some. It's that simple. I don't see what is so complicated by this. And just to show you how weak Obama is when dealing with terrorist states, he didn't even get our hostages back. Part of a deal of this magnitude, the first thing would have been send back the hostages and we won't talk to you. Instead, he got nothing for the deal. Now, why does Obama want Iran to have a nuclear weapon? Let's take the worst case scenario. Many of you don't even care if Iran has 10 nuclear weapons. You're sitting somewhere listening to this show saying, you know what? What do I care if they have nuclear weapons? Israel has 100, allegedly 200 somewhere hidden in Israel. They all have nuclear weapons. Why shouldn't they have more? Well, think about that one. I'll give you a couple of reasons why. Israel has never threatened to wipe a nation off the planet. Israel's never said, I'm going to use a nuclear weapon to wipe anyone off the planet. I don't know any nation has ever done that. Pakistan, which is a Muslim nation, has had nuclear weapons for a long time now. They've never said, we're going to wipe India off the planet, thank God. They never said, we're going to wipe anyone off the planet. They're run by rational Muslims. Pakistan is run by rational Muslim leaders. Iran is not run by rational Muslim leaders. Iran is run by a group of fanatical, apocalyptic Muslim leaders. Do you understand that? If you only understood the mindset of the mullahs, you might be able to understand what I'm saying to you. It's not about Muslim versus non-Muslim. This is about rational versus insane. The mullahs are insane. They're apocalyptic. They want war. They want nuclear war. They don't believe that unless there is a war to end all wars, meaning a war that wipes out humanity, then their vision, their twisted vision of Islam can only be realized after that. Do you understand that? Has anyone ever put that on the table? This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. I've talked about the deaths of the SEAL Team 6 in the helicopter crash in 2011. In Afghanistan, I told you that the government is stonewalling a federal judge's order to turn over all documents in the shootdown of that helicopter. I told you I believe it has all the earmarks of an assassination of SEAL Team 6, the very same team that took down Osama bin Laden prior to their being sent on this mission. I also told you this would make a heck of a movie, but that Weinstein and company will not touch it. What a movie that would be. You know, movies can change mass audiences in so many directions. And as you well know, they spend most of their time swaying audiences to hate America, hate the police, hate the church, hate God, hate the family, etc. What a movie this would make. I can even recommend a novel upon which it could be based, called A Time for War by Michael Savage. But that's not the point. We're moving to a domestic terrorism event. Article on WorldNet Daily, will Louis Farrakhan be arrested for his call to kill whites? Written by Leo Holman. Preaching directly from the Quran before a packed Baptist church, the Nation of Islam leader, Louis Farrakhan, told his adoring audience that violent retaliation is the only way for American blacks to, quote, rise up and overthrow their white oppressors. Conservative black leaders told WND that they believe Farrakhan's statements went beyond the limits of free speech into the realm of criminal incitement, although a noted constitutional attorney cautioned that prosecuting on these terms would be an uphill battle. Here is what Farrakhan said at Mount Zion Missionary Baptist Church in Miami in a speech that the Muslim preacher posted on his Facebook page early this week. Quoting the Quran, he said, "I'm looking for 10,000 in the midst of the million, 10,000 men who say death is sweeter than continued life under tyranny." Farrakhan then launched into a poetic tirade against whites, backed up with Quranic verse. The crowd responded with a standing ovation as the 82-year-old Muslim preacher bathed in the moment. Let's listen to the speech and let me decide. Let me hear what you, the American audience, thinks of the Muslim preacher, Louis Farrakhan, spewing his racist, hate-filled message on the Savage Nation.
I'm looking for 10,000 in the midst of the million.
Million.
10,000 fearless men who say death is sweeter than continued life under tyranny. Death is sweeter than to continue to live and bury our children while white folks give the killer.
Or let's turn the hate monger off. You get the overall flavor of Louis Farrakhan. Jack Cashiel, a WND contributor and author of the new book Scarlet Letters, The Ever-Increasing Intolerance of the Cult of Liberalism Exposed, said that the presidency of Barack Obama has resuscitated and breathed new life into hate preacher Farrakhan's ministry, encouraging the hater to spew ever more outrageous racial invective. Cashiel told WND the following. He said, "The Obama presidency has given the 82-year-old Farrakhan new life. By racializing just about everything he has touched, Obama has raised black paranoia to new heights, and Farrakhan is exploiting that paranoia with potentially lethal consequences." Now, Farrakhan's Miami speech has been going viral on social media. Not a word from the White House or the media on Farrakhan's call to wage jihad on America's police. Do you believe this? Can you believe this is going on in this country right now? Well, of course you can believe it. It goes on every day. It goes on every day. Farrakhan is, let us say, a little less varnished than some in the White House. Let's put it to you that way. A little rougher around the edges. Not as smooth. Not as convincing. But the message is sort of the same as that of Al Sharpton, is it not? What do you think the protests in Ferguson were about? What do you think happened in Baltimore? You think it happened in a vacuum? All right, you get the picture. So I don't have to go on and on. Just give me a little background of what's going on in the United States of America under this administration.
Savage.